This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Radio for Peace. I'm Dwayne Bradley, and this is KPFT Houston.
Welcome to another edition of the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. As always, a pleasure to be with you this morning here at 90.1 KPFT FM here in Houston, Texas, and on the web, www.newcapitalshow.com, 10 a.m. here, Central Time. I was going to prepare a monologue for today, and then suddenly, around the middle of yesterday, I began to have excruciating pain in my right ear. And then I couldn't hear. And then I had excruciating pain, had to go to the doctor kind of on an emergency basis and found out that I have something called an ear infection. So my right ear is now totally closed off, which actually fits because some of the headphones here in the studio, the right ear piece never works. So now it's not just the headphone that's not working, it's my right ear that is not working. So I'm going to need your help to get through the show today. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'd like to talk about Iraq today. Haven't really spent a lot of time on it lately, and with this report that is upcoming on September 11th by David Petraeus, the general in Iraq, there's been an awful lot of focus in the major media, and I think it's fair that we should cover this story as well. 713-526-5738. I'd even started to write a monologue, and I called it the title of it. It doesn't matter. So I'll start off the first paragraph. I said, it doesn't matter whether the surge is working. It doesn't matter how one defines working. It doesn't matter if the surge is not working. It doesn't matter if the surge is a good concept. It doesn't matter if the surge is nonsense. It doesn't matter if the surge is just a publicity stunt. It doesn't matter if the surge is accomplishing great things or not. None of this matters to the two essential facts that cannot be surged away. Fact number one, the U.S. has destroyed Iraq. The U.S. has destroyed Iraq. Fact number two, the Bush administration has destroyed goodwill in America. And when I say goodwill in America, I mean goodwill of America, within America, all around. These are the two essential facts of the war. The Bush administration, of course, and George Bush in particular, wants to get us to focus on the latest strategy change there. This is the surge, the addition of 30,000 troops designed to stabilize Iraq. I saw a movie the other night called No End in Sight. You may have heard of this film. It's a documentary that is now playing at the Angelica Theater here in Houston. And if you're joining us from other parts of the country, I'm sure that it is showing in your area as well. No End in Sight. It's made by Charles Ferguson, who was a political scientist at the Brookings Institution and decided to make this documentary. It's a very sobering documentary. I went one night around 10 o'clock p.m. and I was the only person sitting in there, which was great because I was allowed to yell back at the screen. The first time I've ever been able to do that. I mean, I could call those guys every name in the book, and I did it. I was able to do it in a big, empty cinema. And it was a very sobering movie that essentially portrays the Bush administration as having planned this invasion, as we now know, without any hint of how to provide security and follow-up. And, of course, the movie, therefore, leaves aside the issue of should we or should we not have invaded Iraq? Was there a reason? Were there weapons of mass destruction? Of course, many of us, and I believe, that we had no right to invade that country. And so it's double damnation that once they invaded the country, they had no plan to provide security. Josh Marshall, who writes a blog called TalkingPointsMemo.com, which I frequent and like to read, he writes the following. He says, "We are bigger than Iraq. By that I do not mean we, as America, are bigger or better than Iraq as a country. I mean that the sum of our national existence is not bound up in what happens there. Our country will go on. Whatever happens, we will recover from it. And whatever might happen, there are things that matter much more to this country's future, like whether we have a functioning military anymore, whether our economy is wrecked, whether this country tears itself apart over this catastrophe. But we'll go on and look back at this and judge what happened. Not so for the president. For him, this is it. He's not bigger than this. His entire legacy as president is bound up in Iraq, which is another way of saying that his legacy is pretty clearly an irrecoverable shambles. That is why, as the folly of the enterprise becomes more clear, he must continually puff it up into more and more melodramatic and world historical dimensions. A century-long ideological struggle and the like. For the president, a 1 in 1,000 shot at some better outcome is well worth it, no matter what the cost. Because at least that's a 1 in 1,000 shot at not ending his presidency with the crushing verdict history now has in store. It's also worth just letting things keep on going as they are forever, because, like Macabre, something better might turn up." And Macabre is a character out of Dickens' novel, the eternally optimistic person in the face of contravening facts. "Going double or nothing by expanding the war into Iran might be worth it, too, for the same reason. For him, for the president, how can it get worse? And when you boil all of this down, what it comes down to is that the president now has very different interests than the country he purports to lead." That's Josh Marshall writing in TalkingPointsMemo.com. I think that's a very, very insightful statement that Marshall makes. When you boil all of this down, what it comes down to is that the president now has very different interests than the country he purports to lead. I would argue that the president and many in his party, certainly his administration, has always had different interests than the country they purport to lead. Which is why they're liars. Which is why they're subterfugers. Which is why they're spinners. That's the thing they do best, is to pull the wool over the eyes of the country. To portray themselves as being something they're not. It began with Bush being a so-called compassionate conservative. Which leads me to the next thing. A book has now appeared called Dead Certain by Robert Draper. Robert Draper used to work for Texas Monthly. In it, and this has gotten some press out there, in it, Bush purports to cry, to tear up upon learning of the death of U.S. soldiers. Here's a review of it from the New York Times. "Mr. Draper tells us that the president repeated his conviction that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction to his chief of staff, Andrew H. Card, Jr., all the way up until Card's departure in April 2006, almost exactly 3 years after the coalition had begun its fruitless search for WMDs. already dead certain has caused controversy, showing that the blame game in an increasingly embattled administration is already in full play. In the book, President Bush is quoted saying of the much criticized decision to disband the Iraqi army, a decision many experts say fatally fueled the insurgency, well, the policy was to keep the army intact, adding that it just didn't happen. Imagine that. Imagine that. It just didn't happen. The president of the United States launches an invasion of Iraq, and something as crucial as keeping security forces assembled in Iraq to keep and restore, and then to keep and preserve order, it just didn't happen under his watch. That's staggering. Think to the Second World War. Think of people like General Eisenhower, Franklin Roosevelt, George Marshall, the planning that went into occupying Nazi Germany after that war. Can you imagine if Eisenhower would have just said, "Look, it just didn't happen. We weren't able to provide order in the areas that we occupied after the fall of Nazi Germany. This was a president who ran on competence. Remember, he's the MBA president. This vision that MBAs, you know, are competent, more competent, whatever, businesslike. And what we find out, and what we're finding out through documentaries, through books, is something that many of us already knew, that this president is not a competent person. He's incompetent to do anything other than to run for office. And certainly he's had a lot of help to do that from people who put him up to it and saw in him a compliant figure, a malleable hunk of Play-Doh who could be shaped to their whims. In many ways, Bush is the creation of the Republican Party. He's exactly what they wanted. What did they want? Let's go on with Draper's book. What they wanted was this. It is also clear from Mr. Draper's book that President Bush dislikes criticism and bad news, and that staffers found it very hard to, quote, stick one's arm into the fiercely whirring gears of Team Bush's institutionalized optimism and say, let's slow down and rethink this. For that matter, this volume, this book, is studded with examples on matters ranging from the Iraq War to Hurricane Katrina, of aides failing to deliver distressing information to the president or failing to persuade him to grapple quickly with unfortunate developments. The ideologues of the Republican Party wanted this in a president. They didn't want someone who would be able to think critically for himself and say, wait a minute, I may have gotten here through dubious means. I may have gotten here through specious motivations of my own making. But I got here, and now I have an obligation to think critically about my country and to think critically about the things that are presented to me, like invading a foreign country without pretext. The Republican Party wanted an unthinking, unblinking hunk of Play-Doh, and that's what they got. In her much-criticized role as National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, for instance, is described as deciding to be the president's information broker and sounding board, rather than the person, as Mr. Draper puts it, who would ruffle his feathers with opinions that he did not share. She is quoted as telling a close friend, "It's not my exercising influence over him. I am internalizing his world." As other reporters and former administration insiders have frequently observed, dissenting views, be they on Iraq or domestic policy, are rarely solicited by this White House. Dissenting views are rarely solicited. Imagine that. Imagine that you are running a major enterprise, a city, a municipality, a state, government, a company, a family, whatever it is. And you begin to see things that are concerning. If you are a liberated mind, if you are a liberal, meaning if you are open to ideas and you're not fearful of the truth. You call people of differing viewpoints in and you say, I'd like to hear different sides of this argument. You go first and then you go. I'm going to listen with an open mind. That's leadership. That's thinking. This president doesn't want to hear anything that doesn't conform with his reality. Members of the Iraq study group told Mr. Draper that they found the president far more upbeat than the realities in Iraq seem to warrant, and that it occurred to them, to one of them, that President Bush did not so much want to hear their views as convince us that we should be writing a report that would reflect his views. The Iraq Study Group, a convocation of elder statesmen and stateswomen. Imagine that, going to see this president and getting the impression that he would rather they adopt his views of reality. What's more, when dissenting views did reach the president, the results could be an obstinate digging in of the heels. For example, calls for Mr. Rumsfeld's resignation from several retired generals in the spring of 2006 elicited this response from Mr. Bush. No military guy is going to tell a civilian how to react. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. As one aide glumly put it, the moment someone would say, fire Donald Rumsfeld would get a new lease on life. My friends, I do this with my two-year-old sometimes. If I want her to do something, she's at that age now, where if I ask her to do something, she's going to say just no. She says no. So sometimes I'll use reverse psychology, right? People who've had children, I'm sure everybody has done this. You want her to clean up her room. So you say, dear, sweetie pie, don't clean up your room. I don't want you to clean up your room. And then what does the child do? Oh, I'm going to clean up the room. The moment someone would say, fire Donald Rumsfeld would get a new lease on life. What clear indication do we have that we have essentially a two-year-old in the White House? The best approach to selling the ever-competitive president on an idea, aides told Mr. Draper, was to tell him, this is going to be a really tough decision. You got that, folks? The way you get the president to rubber stamp something quickly is to tell him it's going to be a really tough decision. Right? Because then he competitively wants to make it an easy decision. No, it's not. It's not going to be a tough decision. Here's the decision. Blam! What does a thinking person do? Thank you, Mr. or Ms. Aide, for bringing this to me. It does appear indeed like it's going to be a tough decision. I look forward to your helping me sort through these difficult issues. It's an adult. Mr. Rumsfeld gave similar advice, telling his lieutenants that if they wanted the president's support for an initiative, it was always best to frame it as a, quote, big new thing. Mr. Draper writes that Mr. Bush was, at root, a man who craved purpose, a sense of movement, of consequence, and that he was irresistibly drawn to big ideas like bringing democracy to the Middle East, big ideas that stood in sharp contrast to the prudent small ball played by his father, who was often accused of lacking the vision thing. I know. Last I looked, his father invaded the Middle East as well. Not sure you'd call that small ball. So what does the current president plan to do after leaving office? At the end of this revealing book, Mr. Draper quotes, and Draper got FaceTime with the president for this book. Mr. Draper quotes the president saying that he plans to build a Freedom Institute. It'll be in Dallas, by the way. A sort of think tank where young leaders from abroad can learn about democracy. Folks, you can go learn about democracy from the George Bush Freedom Institute. Oh, my gosh. Mr. Bush, who has a net worth estimated at $8 million to $21 million, also said he would like to make some money. As he put it, replenish the old coffers. Mr. Bush needs to replenish his $20 million estate. He said that he could make ridiculous money on the lecture circuit. I don't know what my dad gets, said the president, but it's more than $50,000, $75,000 a speech. I don't know about you, but I would vote that the first speech that Mr. Bush should give would be one that he has to give for free. Perhaps a deposition or testimony in a criminal lawsuit against him. As I started this show talking about, there are two essential facts that cannot be surged away about Iraq. One, the U.S. has destroyed Iraq. Here is a report from a woman who has a blog. She is Iraqi. She writes the following as of just a day or two ago. She says, as we crossed the border and saw the last of the Iraqi flags, the tears began again. The car was silent except for the prattling of the driver, who was telling us stories of escapades he had while crossing the border. I sneaked a look at my mother sitting beside me, and her tears were flowing as well. There was simply nothing to say as we left Iraq. I wanted to sob, but I didn't want to seem like a baby. I didn't want the driver to think I was ungrateful for the chance to leave what had become a hellish place over the last 4.5 years. The Syrian border was almost equally packed, but the environment was more relaxed. People were getting out of their cars and stretching. Some of them recognized each other and waved or shared woeful stories or comments through the windows of the cars. Most importantly, we were all equal. Sunnis and Shia, Arabs and Kurds, we were all equal in front of the Syrian border personnel. We were all refugees, rich or poor. And refugees all look the same. There's a unique expression you'll find on their faces, relief mixed with sorrow, tinged with apprehension. The faces almost all look the same. The first minutes after passing the border were overwhelming. Overwhelming relief and overwhelming sadness. How is it that only a stretch of several kilometers and maybe 20 minutes so firmly segregates life from death? How is it that a border no one can see or touch stands between car bombs, militias, death squads, and peace and safety? It's difficult to believe, even now. I sit here and write this and wonder why I cannot hear the explosions. This Iraqi blogger has now joined at least 2.35 million Iraqis in exile, while Baghdad and much of the country continues to burn. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'm going to take a short music break. When we come back, we'll get to your calls. This is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold. Back in a moment.
Yes, indeed. Strange feeling tonight. Change it all. Change it all. Probably by the way, yeah, we'll have a
Welcome back to the New Capital Show. www.newcapitalshow.com, coming to you from the studios at KPFT 90.1 FM, part of the Pacifica Radio Network, part of the liberal progressive universe, part of liberated minds everywhere. Let's get to the phones. The phone number is 713-526-5738. We were talking about Iraq, and unfortunately, we were talking about George W. Bush, who, as of this date, is still the president of this country. First up is going to be Marco. Marco, welcome.
Yeah, how are you, Leo?
Good.
First of all, I hope you get well with your right ear.
Yeah, I've got good medical help. The friend of the family's is one of the great ear doctors in town. But it made me think: what do you do if you don't have health insurance? What do you do? You know, we'll get to that another day. But thank you very much.
Well, anyway, what I want to make a comment real quick, and it's absolutely true. This country is so misinformed. People don't really want to. The big masses, I feel like they're reluctant to really know what's going on. And I feel the problem with this country, it's, hopefully I'm wrong, but I feel like it's very a tiny few people who's really, in a way, like you said earlier, enlightening to understand what's really going on.
Yes.
The most critical thing about this whole situation, I guess it started in 2000 when they stole the election.
Uh-huh.
And the paid media. They decided not to really tell us and shut it off completely, so most people didn't know. A lot of people knew, but since the media, the mass media stopped mentioning it, ever since then, we just have become dormant in a way. And since they stole the elections, it just snowballed to what has happened till this day. So my biggest comment I can say is about this is, the next elections are going to be the most important elections in this country.
I'm with you.
What people need to know at this point, if they decide to vote for any politician who's also a member of these other entities, such as CFR, Council on Foreign Relationships, which pretty much is about globalism and not the interests of the people,
mm-hmm.
we're in big problems. This is going to be. It's going to be more of the same, if not worse.
Uh-huh.
And I already know, have a list of the candidates who's in the CFR, which is the Council on Foreign Relationships, which is about globalism. All the things that this country, you know, we're against stuff. And people need to know who these politicians are, because if you don't tell them, they're not going to know.
I agree, Marco. We need to be asking where does our representative stand on Iraq? Where do they stand on health care? Where do they stand on these things? And they need to take a stand. It needs to be clear, and they need to stick to it. We want to be able to vote for people who stand for something, and we want them to then honestly go about implementing the things that they claim to be in support. Thanks for the call, Marco.
All right, thank you.
Next up is Teresa. Good morning, Teresa.
How are you doing?
Great.
Want to thank you very much for last week's show and what you said about priorities, because that is crucial.
Yeah.
I have two things. Number one, I want to get your feed on how to move the media and make a difference, other than putting a KPFT bumper sticker on your car,
mm-hmm.
Because I think they're bought and sold, and of course this administration is rewarding people. But my real the issue that concerns me the most right now, since you want to talk about the war, is depleted uranium. And it made me think about that book called Toxic Sludge is Good for You. Do you think that they're using depleted uranium in Iraq? And if so, they're undermining the whole civilian population with something that they can't see, that's just going to, for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years, you know, give, you know, undermine their health. And our soldiers, and Stauber wrote this book called Toxic Sludge is Good for You, and how we kind of justify what we're going to do with these byproducts of, you know, our industry. Do you think there is such a thing, and should we investigate it, and where do you go from here?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea if it was used or has been used. I would think if it was used, it was used during the early stages of the war.
The movie Beyond Treason shows how it was used.
Uh-huh.
What do we do to force our legislators to kind of check into this. Because if it's still being used in any way, it's...
Yeah. I don't know if it is, Teresa. I simply don't know. I don't know enough. I think you're going to be far better informed on the issue than I am, and I need to come up to date. I know that I saw an acknowledgement by the Israeli government that depleted uranium was used in last summer in the war in Lebanon. But I haven't seen anything recently on American use in Iraq. I think most people are focused right now on how to manage this situation going forward, and so I don't know that there's a lot of specific focus on particular armaments,
Remember during with the anti-abortion people, how they paraded around with the pictures of the fetuses.
Mm-hmm.
If this administration needs to be associated with the birth defect,
mm-hmm.
just the birth defects,
yep. mm-hmm.
associated with the use of this,
mm-hmm.
and if they're hiding information that this is still being used, then that's what they should be. Everybody, every time people think about George Bush, they should be thinking about babies with birth defects.
I agree, Teresa. I think that that's a great point, that when people think about Bush rather than this, you know, he's tried to paint a picture of himself as freedom loving, and you know, he states that he cries when he sees the death of American soldiers. I think that people need to realize the incredible havoc and destruction that he has wrought in Iraq and elsewhere on our planet.
Could we get our legislators to take a stand and say, even though I support the war, I would never support depleted uranium, and I'm going to stake my reputation on the fact that we are not using depleted uranium?
Yep. Thanks, Teresa.
All right. Thank you.
Next up will be Michelle. Welcome to the New Capital Show, Michelle.
Hi. It's great to have your show, and it's great to be able to have a platform to speak at least for a few seconds.
You've got it. You've got the platform.
Okay. Before 911, I was very, very happy just to ignore everything that was going on. And after 911, really began a journey for looking at a bigger picture, to the extent that I went to Washington, D.C. over the summer. And it was really kind of distressing to actually see how representatives speak to each other, because they're not even in the same room having a discussion. They're watching TVs of what's going on, if they're even in the office.
What you're saying is that they watch C-SPAN now. They don't even bother to show up on the legislative floor.
No. Actually, they show the legislative floor in the offices,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you kind of like keep abreast of who's currently up and how much more time you have or whatever. And when I went to visit representatives, what was interesting was all the aides and no representatives. And then whenever you talk to the issues, the aides really didn't know a whole lot. And you can leave a little note about, you know, concerns that you might have. But I can say that one of the things that we can really be grateful for in George Bush's administration is that finally everything that we've been doing from the beginning of this country has come to light. And this couldn't have happened without some sort of formulation, marketing plans, ideas that helped to bring us to this point to actually accomplish Bush's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's
you're saying that Bush has galvanized opposition.
Mm-hmm. He has galvanized a lot of planning for this country to actually arrive at this point.
I think you're exactly right, Michelle.
And now we have the opportunity, the best opportunity that we as Americans have ever had collectively, to actually try to make a difference, to actually wake up,
mm-hmm.
and to say, you know, I want the America that I was taught to believe in. I want the Constitution. I want the Bill of Rights. And what am I going to do to be the change that I want to see? And so anyway, I'll just hang up and let it go from there.
Michelle, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, in this book, in the movie, No End in Sight, there's a clip played of Bush declaring war on Iraq. And sitting behind him on his credenza in the Oval Office are pictures of his children. Very clearly, pictures of Barbara and Jenna Bush, his daughters, sitting behind him as he declares war on Iraq, that hostilities have commenced. And what an obscenity. What a staged, managed obscenity. What was he thinking? What were his handlers thinking that this was going to convey to the public? This is a man who cares about children. Look, he's got his own children. Look what's happened to the children of Iraq. Can you imagine being a child? Not being able to find food? Being forced out of your home? Witnessing the most appalling violence? This is what's come at the hands of this president. And in the name of this country, in our names as Americans. And I think Michelle's exactly right. Americans are waking up and saying, uh-uh. No, not in my name. Next up will be Dylan, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We're talking about Iraq and other things today. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. Thank you for your time. Real quick, I just want to kind of touch up on the Patriot Act. A lot of people neglect the fact that every day American citizens are being spied on by national security agencies as well as other intelligence organizations throughout the United States. The last time I checked, that was illegal. However, our government fails to respond to this and admits that they are spying on African Americans. The technology is out there. I know because I used to work with it. I spent some time in Iraq. In fact, I was in Mosul during the suicide bombing that took place in the DFAT, which is the dining facility.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after that, I left. The Patriot Act allows the National Security Agency to not only listen to average Americans' telephone calls, but also remote into their phones. How many Americans today are walking around with trios of BlackBerries? Unbeknownst to them, our government has the capabilities to remote access into these devices, these handheld devices, to download everything from contact lists to telephone numbers, instant messages, emails, etc., documents, whatever may be on the device. How is this legal? The America that President Bush knows and the America that I know are obviously two different Americas. What can we do? Have you ever tried emailing the National Security Agency for a Freedom of Information request? They send you back a template. It looks like something somebody copied and pasted, and they give you the same response. Unfortunately, for people like you and I, just average Americans, there's nothing we can do about this. It's been brought up to Congress, and they keep ignoring it. Both Republicans and Democrats, mostly Democrats in fear of repercussions.
And Dylan, this was the most recent passage of the modifications to the act that came about just before Congress went on recess in August.
Sure.
And Democrats are now claiming that, well, it's got a six-month fuse on this law, and it's going to set to expire 6 months from then, which would be about February of next year. And they say they're saying they're going to be much tougher on it and revoke some of the things. But your point is exactly right. I'm going to hang up, Dylan, now because your phone's not that great. But I appreciate the call. We are being asked. We are being asked by our government to trust them. We're being asked to trust them, that they will not misuse power that's granted to them. And the fact of the matter is that the Bush administration, other parts of the government, have shown no reason that they should be trusted. They've shown no reason that they should be trusted. In fact, they've shown, I don't want to say no reason, but they've shown far more reasons that they should not be trusted. Certainly the Bush administration has shown reason after reason why they cannot be trusted. They cannot be trusted. And I agree. When you put power and powerful techniques in the hands of those who cannot be trusted, you have a problem. And I concur with Dylan. We have a problem. Next up is Laura. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi. I would like to mention that there's a lot of connections with fascism in this war against Iraq. And we are violating the human rights that we have historically claimed to uphold by when we're going into Iraq. We're creating a situation where we often violate human rights, and there's been a lot of abuses at Abu Ghraib prison.
Yes.
And I've heard that some people there were held on, like, really dubious charges. Like, one guy was simply a passenger in a taxi that someone else, that a police officer who might have been at a checkpoint later said was a stolen vehicle. And the guy who was a passenger didn't know it was stolen, and he was, like, sent to prison along with the cab driver.
You know, imagine, Laura, imagine that you're a family, and U.S. Army is going through and breaking open doors in search for people that they regard to be combatants, enemy combatants, and your breadwinner in the family is there, and he's taken away. No notice, no due process. He's taken away, and he's gone for, you know, a day. Imagine how you feel in a day. Now he's gone for a week, and now he's gone for 6 months. This person has disappeared. You know he's in some prison somewhere, but there's no due process and no indication when he's going to get out. You've got children. You're a woman with children. And this is what we've done to Iraq. It's a place with no jobs and little hope, and we've just totally destroyed the infrastructure. We've destroyed the country. It's why I said at the outset of the show, the surge, they're trying to get the surge, they're trying to... And I'm not saying the surge isn't having some good effect. I'm frankly one of the believers that, frankly, this country, America, the United States of America, should be willing to spend every last penny that it has to bring security and peace to Iraq because of what we've done there. You know, 30,000 troops is nothing, and all 275 million of us should be over there trying to fix what we made. But that's not going to happen. This is why I said at the outset, this surge that they're engaged in cannot change the two essential facts. First, the fact is that we have destroyed Iraq. We destroyed Iraq. I'm not saying it was great before then. I'm not saying that Saddam Hussein was great. Truth of the matter is that we were instrumental in providing him with weapons and supporting his power when he was in power. And the second is we've hurt goodwill within and without our country. Those are the two essential facts. No surge is going to change that. What's done is done. Thank you, Laura.
Well, I think that the way to improve security in Iraq would be for us all to get out, because I think this is actually creating wars, or actually exacerbating a lot of the wars between Sunnis and Shias. Yep. And I've even heard of the U.S. government giving weapons to one side, supposedly some Sunni and groups or whatever, to fight Al-Qaeda. But...
Okay, Laura, thanks for the call.
I think a lot of it's just making things worse.
Yep, thanks. I don't know what the answer is. the insurgent civil war that has occurred there has occurred in the wake of there being any central power in Iraq. So that leads you to conclude that there needs to continue to be some kind of central power. On the other hand, the civil war, it's occurred. It's occurring. This debate of is it occurring, is it not occurring? There has been ethnic cleansing. When you've got 2.5 million people who've left the country and mass relocations within Iraq, and then of course the number of people who are just dead. What's happened has happened. The civil war has occurred. There was no plan to provide security in the wake of the invasion, and there never should have been an invasion in the first place. Next up, we'll take, let's take Saj. Saj.
Yes, for the most part, I think that most Americans are culpable for the... Because...
For what, Saj? You broke up. They're culpable for what?
they're culpable for the events in Iraq, mm-hmm. as they stand now, because after 4 years of the Bush administration, I would expect that reasonable citizens would go to the polls and make their intentions known, you know. But instead, you have the same, a president coming back to power, even after all the atrocities.
Yeah.
So I think that when I hear people talk about, this should have happened, many of these people had a chance to change what they thought was right, mm-hmm. was wrong. But, you know, it's the same old, same old.
Well, I'll tell you what, Saj, I'm willing to accept my share of responsibility. I mean, I don't think anybody can. Everyone in the world is responsible for something. You know, and I've got no problem saying, you know, I bear responsibility. I wouldn't say that I was very active in making my voice heard back in the 90s. I sort of went quiet as a person and trusted that things were being taken care of, and that changed after 9/11. But I think that we all, I don't think it's productive to say, you know, all Americans bear responsibility and no one else. We all have responsibility, and that's an important word. It's better than blame. We all have responsibilities right now. We just heard Amy Goodman focusing her show on the issue of global warming, environmental catastrophe. We all have responsibility. We must be responsible. We have to uphold our responsibilities. Saj, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And I think that more people certainly are coming to the awareness of what has happened in Iraq and how it has come about. And people are standing up and making documentaries, calling up radio shows. And it's my hope that when they find themselves in the voting booth, that they will also express themselves, because that's ultimately the most powerful way that we can make change. Let's see. Next, let's take Evelyn on line 6. Evelyn, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thank you, Leo. Mm-hmm. I agree with everything that's been said, and it's been a crime against humanity, the war in Iraq, and against even our soldiers to send them into harm's way.
Absolutely. Those soldiers have been put in an impossible
right.
position, these young people. And for Bush to claim that
correct.
He's their defender and he's their supporter, it's a farce. It's just more of the same kabuki theater that's gone on with this administration. If you cared about the troops, you would have had a plan. You wouldn't have put them in harm's way in the
correct.
First place, and if you were going to, you would make sure that there was a plan
right.
to keep them safe and to give them responsibilities mm-hmm. that were commensurate with their skills.
Mm-hmm. But I also think that Bush is simply a product of his party
yes.
and certain element of corporate America. They wanted him, and he's just like a puppet. And what troubles me even more than Bush are the Congress and the enablers in Congress. Only 23 senators voted against the Iraq War resolution, and every single senator who intended to run for president, except Russ Feingold, voted for that Iraq War resolution when they knew or should have known that Iraq was a weak country and most likely didn't have WMDs. And I say that because I heard George Tenet on C-SPAN before the war, saying even he had no clue whether there were weapons of mass destruction, but he thought Saddam Hussein was well contained and he'd only use any weapons he had if we invaded and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So they should have known that. Plus, Jim Webb, Senator of Virginia, wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post before the war warning against this and what would happen. Wes Clark testified in Congress against it. So Washington should have known what Bush was up to and that he couldn't be trusted. And it troubles me that people running for office right now in 2008 are not being held accountable. And they're not even apologizing, or they're not
yep.
even saying, you know, I owed it to the Iraqi people and to our soldiers to do the right thing and risk my career, perhaps.
What you're saying, Evelyn, is that we want leaders with courage.
Exactly.
And the courage to know the truth and the courage to speak the truth. And those who should have known the truth should have voted the truth, regardless of the consequences. In the wake of 9/11, with this patriotic drumbeat to get everybody to fall into line with the Bush administration, politicians should have been willing to risk their votes to vote against this war. And I completely agree with you.
Well, let me say one more thing, because I remember you reminded me. I called a couple of months ago and mentioned Wes Clark's website, but I got my phone battery ran out, and I didn't have a chance to leave it. It's securingamerica.com. He has said he might run. He sure would have the leadership. I know it's late in the game. He's just come out with a new book, A Time to Lead. He does have personal courage, and he did speak out against it, and he continues to speak out. And the website votevets.org and Stop Iran War, because they're planning, according to Clark and many others, Cy Hirsch and so on, they're planning a war now on Iran, the 70 million people, multicultural country, and the whole thing is tragic, and we do need the leadership. I so much agree, and thank you so much.
Evelyn, thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We've only got about, 7 minutes left. Let's see if we can get a few more calls in here, so make your point, and then let's give everyone a chance to get in. This is going to be next is Mitch. Mitch, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi. Well, I got a few questions. You know, I watched that debate.
No. Let's do one question, because I've only got 7 minutes, Mitch. So see if you can do it in one package.
Yeah, no problem. My question is I'm tired of hearing about the quote unquote liberal media, which I don't think our media is liberal, but I keep hearing it. I watched that Fox debate last night, and every time Ron Paul talked, there was laughter. Mm-hmm. Now, since I'm a skeptic of Fox News, I wondered if that was staged, and I just wanted to hear your take on that.
Okay, Mitch, I'm going to hang up and respond. I didn't see the debate. The laughter, I don't know about the laughter. It may be coming from Republican audiences, but let me just speculate, without having seen the debate, that Ron Paul, who is very much against the war in Iraq and very much against many of the positions that are taken by the standard Republican Party, that hearing those things is so shocking to Republican audiences, to conservative audiences, coming from the mouth of a purported Republican, that their laughter is nervous. They're nervous. They don't know how to deal with the concepts that he's presenting, even though many of the concepts that he presents are actually traditional conservative viewpoints. And to me, it would be a measure of how off base the Republican Party has gone that they'd be laughing and tittering. That's just a guess. Let's see. Next up, let's take Pete, line 3. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Oh, hi. The thing that's really disturbing, that's extra, that's different about this war, is that they've added a mercenary army, Blackwater, Eric Prince's Blackwater.
That's right.
Answer to nobody.
The number of troops, if you were to call those people troops, which frankly you would need to, would double. So we'd have not 175,000, but 350,000 troops in there. These are jobs that used to be fulfilled, as you point out, Pete, is your name Pete?
Well, part of my name is.
Okay, Pete. These are functions that used to be fulfilled by Army personnel in the Second World War in Korea and so forth. Now they're being fulfilled by mercenaries. And so really the number of troops is double what it is, and we've still gotten the result that we have.
No discipline. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Pete. We've got about another 4 minutes left. Let's see if we can get maybe a couple calls in quickly. Next up is David. David, welcome to the show.
Yes, I would like to say that I really appreciate your editorials when I get to catch them every week.
Thank you.
And I think it must have been that the progressive or true conservative, as you say, presidential candidate who within the past 24 hours said that there are over 5,000 casualties, American casualties, in Iraq.
That's right.
Rather than the purported 3,700,
if you include the contractors that Pete was talking about, yeah, that's exactly right, David. Thank you.
And also, I have a question that maybe you or your listeners, and I'm just not that sophisticated to decipher this website that I saw. It's called MySpace 9/11. Convenient, and it presents a case that Bush and his cronies were implicated.
Yep, I've seen it, David. Thank you.
Is it true?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I've seen this before. I've seen this video that's come out. It got a lot of play that the Bush administration, the U.S. government, was an active planner, complicit in 9/11. I don't believe it, and I think it's not correct. My own opinion. I don't see any proof there. Let's see. Let's take another call. How about Tony's been holding? Tony, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yeah, Tony, go ahead, real quick.
I just wanted to say, you was talking about responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The root of that word is the ability to respond. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just important
yep.
for people, when you say take responsibility, if you have the ability to respond to anything you dislike, then you have responsibility.
Yep. And, thank you, Tony. Okay. Thanks. Words are important. Words are very important. Raul, welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a comment about the depleted uranium situation. For sure, our troops are just swimming in it right now
mm-hmm.
because it's a result of spent ammunition, also non-depleted uranium. And I want to end with a quotable quote by James Madison. If tyranny and oppression come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Raul.
That's just all I wanted to add.
Thanks. Let's take Christian. Christian.
Hey, I just wanted to say that we need to step up and just really realize that Washington, Capitol Hill, everyone on Congress, they're part of that group that is being, you know, putting the hood over their heads as well. Like, they're just being deceived into thinking that this is also something that we support. So we as American people just need to take a stand and be proactive and not reactive.
You're taking your stand. Thanks for the call, Christian. And last of the day is going to be Phil. Phil, you're the last call of the day. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Leo. How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment about the elections, which I think your first commenter made a good point about in terms of how important they are, because I think it's our last chance to sort of reestablish the credibility of the electoral process, if that's even possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little worried about who is going to be the next president and what they're going to do, because...
I think we're all concerned, Phil.
It seems like just about all those people, you know,
yep.
Hillary and Obama and all the Republicans, they want to stay in Iraq, and some of those people want to go to Iran, and Obama wants to bomb Pakistan.
Yep.
And
Phil will be given some choices, and we will, each of us, make the best choice that we possibly can, but I think
yeah.
we will make it, hopefully, in an educated way. Thanks for the call.
You bet.
Folks, that does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. It's been my pleasure to be with you today. I'll be back next week. You can find us on the web at www.newcapitalshow.com. That's www.newcapitalshow.com. Please add your name to our mailing list. We will be having some events, and you'll be able to get an invitation to it. If you will just go to the subscribe section of the website, you can send email. And if you have any comments about today's show, you can post that on various forums as well. That does it. I hope you have a great week. As I say, I'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Is the only time you see your family when you look at that family portrait over the mantle, yet you don't know how to spend more time together? Well, come on down on September 29th for the inaugural Family Fun Run and Bike Ride, presented by Council for Family Health Education, CFA Chief. supporting KPFT 90.1. Haven't heard of CFHE? It's a nonprofit organization that aims to move family time from that portrait to healthy, fun activities the whole family loves. Activities such as hiking, biking, or just a plain walk around your block. Studies show that if parents lead unhealthy lifestyles, then so do their kids. So why couldn't it work the other way around? So dust off those running shoes and invite all of your friends and family to the Family Fun Run and Bike Race.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.